My Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And yes, we have another show dealing tonight with metaphysics and spirituality and sundry other things, including some science, of course. I thought this evening we should talk about energy and where do we go from here. But I would like to preface the show with some issues about how energy is evolved and some other things due to the changes in focus of the third ray on our planet. Now, some of you know what I mean. Others say, what is he talking about? And that has to do with the way through energies that are focused on our planet, some parts of life grow more than others. Some parts of life are developed more than others when a ray is focused in on the planet. There are seven types of energy. It has to do connectively, correspondingly to seven different types of dimensions of time and space, which is all part of God. So think of it as the seven components of the creator of our universe. And those seven components, four of them are focused at a time on Earth at the present time. Not every planet that's true of, and as a matter of fact, even Earth, that hasn't always been true. The more of these energies are focused, the faster life develops. You might say, well, why not just focus on all seven at a time, get it done, and that's it? Well, you see, when life grows faster on a planet when our spiritual development is less than evolutionary development, things become more aggressive and hostile, and development of those hostile, aggressive things can be very, very destructive. And when you change from one type of ray energy to another, which is what is going on right now from about the spring of 2000 till about the fall of 2012, where that's the middle of the cycle of the change, the third type of energy is moving away. And while that's going on, the people who are most selfish in using it tend to abuse it, because they now are seeking to have that part of themselves continue to grow at the rate it used to, and it doesn't. And so they tend to make huge errors that cost them time, money, energy, and eventually life. And it affects all of us. This is what's happening in our economy. Energy is very much controlled by the third type of energy. So is our economy in general, and anything dealing with what we call civilization in terms of humanity. So anytime we use one part of a lower kingdom to extend our own senses and our own abilities, we are building our civilization and using the elements of the third type of energy. I think that's a great thing, because it allows us to develop ourselves. And again, it has been cut down to a very reasonable amount, because too much of a good thing can be quite destructive. However, this third type of energy has been on the planet for over 650 years, and now it's being diminished, and that causes complications, causes problems. People react rather badly. They become even more selfish in their attempts to keep their sense, because these rays of energy affect our senses. And they reduce our ability to correctly sense what's going on. In our world today, many people are not correctly sensing what's going on. Particularly with our economy, I'm sure you're aware of all of the terrible things that are going on in the world economy, and particularly here in the United States, a little worse than some other places. And we need some solutions on how to deal with this. But I wanted to diverge a little bit to something that was just brought to my attention. And that is that there was a mistake made. Now, again, remember, mistakes are more likely to be made on a mass scale that affects our whole society or even the whole world at this time. And there was a mistake made by a company called Baxter. They make mostly vaccines and other types of pharmaceuticals. And in the process of making a new avian type of flu vaccine, you might say, well, that's a good thing. Maybe it would stop the avian flu. They, instead of putting in killed viruses, which is supposed to impart some type of immunity to what type of bug they were working on, they didn't kill the virus, apparently, and I got live virus in about 20 million doses or so that are scattered throughout 18 or so countries. And this stuff was made overseas. And I don't know. The danger here is that a new type of virus can be made through the advent of this vaccine being given to people. Besides the fact they might get sick from it directly, the more important thing is that they could actually hybrid the viruses that are around them. So the very thing that they were trying to protect against, they could actually make much worse. At any rate, if you want to know more about that particular subject, you can go to the World Wide Web at healthfreedomusa.org and read about this, because I would have to do one or more shows in order to cover everything that's about this whole debacle. There is a danger that it could create the very thing it was trying to prevent. In other words, we could get a pandemic from this if very many people were, or even one technically, were inoculated with this live virus that could then cause some genetic changes through being the person being in contact with another flu virus. So please be aware that this is a danger. That doesn't mean that we can necessarily stop it. Hopefully they're recalling this stuff. They're going to get rid of every last bit of it, and maybe nobody was injected with it yet. I hope not. Okay, so let's move on from that wonderful subject. I just got that a few minutes before I went on the air, so I decided just to throw it out there. I haven't had time to really examine it. What I'm telling you is a synopsis given to me by one of the members of the group, spiritual group I'm a member of, and whether or not it's all true, we'll see. It's healthfreedomusa.org. Check that out. Okay, so let's talk about today's subject and anything else that might be interesting to you. You can call in if you would like. 877-876-5227 if you're in the U.S. If you happen to be in Canada, how about 888-815-9756? And anything you would like to address dealing with the general ideas of metaphysics and spirituality, something about science, hey, give us a call. And now, energy, where do we go from here? Now, you know I've had several shows on energy, and I tried to cover some ideas of future points that we might be able to do. But some of the things that are starting to trouble me about our present situation is that we may be going about the energy crisis in very wrong ways, as we may be going about how to solve the economic crisis in very wrong ways, and they are interrelated. Not only are we in this mess economically because of the high housing subprime issue and then theft on Wall Street by selling greedy subprime mortgages and packages and then insuring against it so that the insurance companies are going out of business. I mean, everything is falling apart. Yeah, they did all that. But besides that, simultaneous with those events, a lot of people have forgotten this, the price of oil tripled. And when you triple something that is a major part of the economy, you also create inflation, and that's what was happening at the end of last summer, and you create tremendous economic hardship, which was also going on. So even before this other thing broke, we got like a double whammy, you see. And so energy is a big issue, and it's part and parcel of the whole problem. How do we solve it? Where do we go from here? Well, I'm concerned that, in part, our government at this stage is not doing a balanced enough approach. They are not necessarily finding solutions for the use of coal, finding solutions even for the use of gas and oil. These things need a natural gas and oil. These things need to be addressed because we are not going to have enough time to convert our economy over to renewable energy in the near future, especially with the economic downturn. Now, one of the things I think they're trying to rely on, which I don't think is going to work, by the way, is solar farms. The idea of this is to take our present technology of solar photovoltaics, in a sense, and a piece of it anyway, and use a very small part of that aspect, and then use mirrors or some other way, like magnifiers, to heat and tremendously get solar cells to work more efficiently, and use much fewer of them to develop a lot of energy. It's not an impossible idea, and there's a couple of small plants like this overseas in Europe. But the real problem is that you only got DC types of electricity, and that still has to be converted to an AC form. And right now, the only method we really have that will work on a large scale, unfortunately, is very inefficient. It involves creating big, giant turbines. Inverters can't be really made large enough anywhere near the size necessary to take the huge amounts of electricity produced in this manner and get it to the place where it will be usable in our present infrastructure. Is it possible to build a DC, direct current, type of infrastructure? Well, it kind of was. The only problem was that a guy named Westinghouse in the 1890s proved that that Edison, who wanted to do exactly that, wanted to have DC as the main power system for all electricity, it was impractical, even impossible. You couldn't go more than a few miles, and it really didn't make much sense. And even you could try to convert it to AC and convert it back to DC. That didn't make any sense either. The losses were enormous. The costs were exorbitant. And so he came up with AC, alternating current. Now, by the way, he was helped in this project by others. I'm not going to get into the political issues of this thing, but he didn't just come up with this on his own, really. But without getting into too much of that, and Nikola Tesla was really the person probably who could be given the credit for this. But nonetheless, it was Westinghouse who got it out there and made it kind of happen, you know. So I think that it's good enough to say that if it wasn't for his expertise in business, it wouldn't have worked, even though I don't think he was the inventor, so to speak, of the technology by any stretch of the imagination. But we do need to look at the question of, well, does this make sense today? Now, we do have more efficient models. We could build a better system than they could have built over 100 years ago. But it's extremely costly, and it may not work even. And there are other issues with these farms, because they're kind of dangerous to some extent. There are things that we really have to be concerned about, and I don't think we could even come close to producing enough energy anywhere within the next 5 or 10 years to substitute for the 51% of electrical energy we presently produce from coal. And that leaves us kind of with no answers. And I'm very concerned about this, because you've heard of clean coal. But the problem with clean coal is that it costs a huge amount more, 60% minimum more to produce, and the technology isn't even completely developed yet. And that's a minimum. It could be like up to 100% more. Well, if you take a very bad economic near future and you plug in 100% rise in cost in energy, that will put us almost certainly in one of the worst, if not the worst, depressions ever seen, if we're not already in a depression. So what I'm saying is that we don't really have the luxury at this time to try to do exactly that kind of thing. Yet I really believe that somehow this is what's being bannered about in our government, based upon what I'm reading and seeing. And that scares me, because it's a non-solution. In other words, they're coming up with things that are more fantasy than reality. You need something that's based more on what can we do in the next 24 months, not in the next 24 years, to solve the problems we have today. Am I certainly in favor of sequestering CO2 and getting rid of greenhouse gases in general? Sure. Yeah, I am, because I believe that we are facing global warming, although right now it's being retarded to some extent because of the economic slowdown. So what I'm saying is that a lot of the greenhouse effect is being promoted by human endeavors and by increases in industry. However, that doesn't solve the problem of the worldwide situation, and we also have to look at other countries. At most, we're 25% of the problem. Even if we solve everything with some heroic effort that destroys the rest of our economy, it doesn't solve the global warming issue, because 75% of the world is going to look at us like we're nuts. They're going to say, oh, yeah, well, let them sequester all their coal plants and do all the other things, and in the meantime, we'll just build more coal plants that just work fine without all that crap. And worry about the world global problems, the global warming problems, climate problems in the future. You see, we can't solve the problem. We have to come up with a solution that is a hallmark example for countries that even have less resources than we have and who are certainly not going to follow us into going off a cliff, even if we're willing to do it, which I hope we're not. I hope this is making some sense to you. Maybe it isn't, but at any rate, so here's the glitch I see, that we don't yet, I haven't heard and seen, and I've been really carefully watching this, a comprehensive energy plan that is making much sense. Our president said he's going to double the use of, renewable energy sources, but doubling that is like a pittance. It will do almost nothing. I read a paper on it yesterday, and it would have virtually zero effect, but I said the same thing in several prior shows. So you can't just double it. You have to increase it huge amounts, like 20 times, 30 times more, to really make any significant difference in almost anything we're doing, including the geopolitical problems we're facing. Doubling it will have little or no effect on any use of oil or anything else. We have to talk about huge changes. So what are some of those huge changes that we can do and that would work rather than become more of a nightmare for us? Well, this is something that Al Gore actually suggested, along with his partner in the sharing of the Peace Prize. That is that it would be extremely helpful if we take it down to the level of individuals instead of trying to build it on such a mass scale. Now, this may not be popular with some power companies, but at the present time, our single best chance of using solar, direct solar energy, not wind or water, that's a form of solar, but it's not direct, would be to use the most efficient we can afford photovoltaics on individual roofs and feed it into the grid system by encouraging people to do this in a way that is affordable and pays for itself. Now, we're trying, this group of people I work with are trying to do exactly that. We're trying to offer that alternative. Now, you could say, well, yeah, how much is that going to cost? Well, far less than trying to rebuild our entire infrastructure of our electrical grid. We might have to enhance it. We might have to build more into it, but we wouldn't have to build a new one. And also buying the land and putting in huge solar energy farms that really don't yet make sense, because you can't get the energy to people that need it. I mean, you can make energy, but in the desert, it's not much use. You've got to get it to populations that may be clear across the country. This method I'm suggesting could be done in many states, not everywhere. I mean, people in northern Alaska may not be too excited about it. And for those of you listening to the show, you might say, well, okay, maybe this guy's great if he lives in Arizona, which is where I live, but it's not going to work for us. But I've got some stuff for you guys, too, so hang on, hang in there. All right, so, yes, if we can get, let's say, a quarter, 25% of all the homes and buildings and offices in the United States producing about a third to half of all the energy that they use through solar, because they're not going to be able to produce all of it. It's just too expensive. The sun doesn't shine all the time. There's a lot of things that go on here. Yeah. But let's say a third to half. What would that do? Well, now we're talking about saving about 30-35% of our total energy. Now we're talking about getting off of the worst abusers, the coal plants, to 30-35%, because they are the plants that are basic. They are the ones that first are online, last to go off. They're the ones that are really the serious issues here. Some of them are pretty old, too, and they're getting time to retire anyway. So because we're feeding it directly into our grid system, we're making up for some of these coal plants. And we're also building our economy, because it's small businesses that will be doing this work rather than big government. It's going to train many people. It'll provide millions of jobs, literally. And it will give the kind of boost we really need. So that's where some of this quote-unquote stimulus money should be going, but I haven't seen any of it earmarked for such a thing. Now they're talking about weatherizing 2 million homes, and believe me, that should come even before we're talking about the solar energy. But I see the two going hand in hand. In other words, anybody who's going to put solar energy in is going to first look at, well, where could I save the wasted energy in my house, or offices, or plant, industrial plant, so that I have to produce less to make more. So it kind of goes hand in hand. So don't think I'm ignoring conservation, because that's the very biggest thing we can do right now is to conserve. I'm only looking at it from today's show, which is where do we go from here in terms of energy. Conservation is always number one. Okay, so we got people who, if they start conserving energy, the effects are doubled from what I just said. Yeah. If you get them to conserve the amounts of energy that can be maximally conserved, and I don't know if we can do this, but certainly it's part of the president's plan, but again, there's nothing, no structure to it. How do you get these people to do this? I mean, are you going to offer loans like are offered to the Small Business Administration? Something like that the banks can then lend money, and it's earmarked, and then 80% of the loan is guaranteed by the government? That kind of makes sense. Some kind of financing plan has to be put in place. Otherwise, nobody's going to do it because they couldn't afford it, particularly in this economy. And the houses aren't worth enough today for people even to probably put a second mortgage on their house, even if they wanted to do it. Okay, so it has to be some kind of global, well, certainly national plan to be able to make this whole thing work. And again, I haven't seen it. Did we suggest it? Yes, we did suggest it. Our group of people sent letters and a whole package to 10 different governmental agencies, including the president himself, and included some of the information I'm telling you tonight. So don't think we're sitting on our laurels, or I'm just sitting here talking to you all and basically blowing smoke. No, I'm saying we're doing what we can. I would hope all of you will join in, because that's what this show is about. We need to work together in this, because we've got to come up with a plan that's going to work. And the present stuff isn't working, and I'm afraid it's not going to. Now, I don't want to be, you know, a chicken little here and saying the sky is falling before we have seen everything. But what we have seen so far, the last few weeks have been frightening me, because they aren't looking as promising as they were, maybe in our fantasies, before that. Okay. So, we can double. Now, if we double that, we basically have gotten 60 to 70%. That's all the foreign oil that we're importing to the United States, is one way to look at it. Or it's getting us off of coal, and all the coal that is not sequestered, 100%, and 20% of the foreign oil or so that we would be using. That's a huge amount of energy that we would be reducing down from just this one idea. And I'm not done. I don't want you to think I'm done by any stretch of the imagination. I've got another more than half a show to go. But I'm trying to show you that there are ways of looking at this whole thing that make a lot more sense than what seems to be coming down the pipe. And I don't want to waste resources, and I mean huge amounts of resources, and things that are going to go nowhere and bury us in debt. This other plan I'm suggesting the government gets all the money back out of it. Because as the homeowner saves money in paying for the amounts of photovoltaics that are used, as well as conservation, or a business person, as they save money, they are putting most of their savings into dollars that are paying the government back for the loan. They even save more than what the loan actually costs in most circumstances. Absolutely true, especially if you include tax credits. In almost every case, that's true. But even without tax credits, it's pretty darn close. If it's done at a low interest loan below, say, 5% interest, which today is, you know, I mean, there is virtually very little interest that's being charged for most things, below 5% interest for up to 20 years. Almost, and somewhere between 15 and 20. It basically allows almost everybody to participate in this. And so in the beginning, you might only get 25%, but within 5 years, you might get 50, 60, 70%. A huge revolution could take place. Now you get up to those kinds of numbers. And we're talking about getting off of all foreign oil. We're talking about getting rid of all coal-fired plants and probably about, say, a third of a gas-fired plant. And some of that natural gas could be used for vehicles, which, because it's much less polluting than is gasoline or oil or diesel. So basically, we have a lot of options here. And that's just starting with the simplest and most direct route to solving the problem. I'm saying do it on the low budget way. Do it without government getting much involved. Rely more on the free market and business, and give people and businesses the incentive to make this work. We have a business plan, which we told the government a couple weeks ago when we sent this package out, that we are willing to reveal and help other businesses to do, even though in a proprietary sense, some of the stuff we developed ourselves. We're willing to share this because we want this to work. And that's what our letters say to these agencies and to these cabinet members, in most cases, that we sent this information to. So, and very important. I'm hoping this is making some sense to all of you who are out there. And if it isn't, you can call in and say, hey, you're nuts. Whatever you're saying is crazy. Or you can tell me whatever better plan you've got. Because, hey, if you've got a better plan, I'll sign up for sure. Yeah? Okay. So that is our number one, possibly first thing to do, is to move into this conservation, but also into individual solar generation. Because we're going to need more energy than we're presently using, by the way. We're running out of energy, and we're about to have severe shortages. So it's very important that we get on the ball with this. I mean, right now. I'm not talking about a year or two from now. First of all, if we're really concerned about our economy, this is a tremendous job builder. And it would work wonders for our economy to do this on a private enterprise scale, not public. Public enterprises generally do not create long-term substantial jobs, and they don't bring the level of workers up very high. Yeah, they talk about shovel up, ready. How many of you out there want to start digging? I mean, that's something back to the 30s. Most of you want to use your minds and you want to use your bodies only if it's necessary, right? I mean, this is where we are at today. We can do that with this new paradigm, because there's a lot of mind involved in it, and there's some physical stuff too for those who prefer that. It's for everybody, and it can work. Okay, we're going to come back and certainly go into this much more. I've got some more answers. I just started the show, and I'm just giving you what the answers are so far. We'll be back in about 2.5, or I think maybe even today it could be 3.5, I'm not sure, minutes or so.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I am your host, Niles McFlower. By the way, if you heard some clicks on the line, we hoped that we were solving that problem. Something was going on between us and the station, but we're working on it. At any rate, back to the show. And tonight, again, we're talking about energy. Where do we go from here? And there's a lot of places to go, but some of them aren't going to get us very far. Some of them may ruin our country. So I'm hoping that I'm explaining things in a way that is intelligent. And if you need to know more, you can call in during the show or afterwards or whatever you want to do. We need everybody to get involved in this because I don't know that we're moving in the right direction. And I have great concerns about that. We go in the wrong direction, things get really fouled up fast. And we could be facing some almost irreconcilable and destructive types of quote-unquote non-solutions. Okay, so if you have any concern about this, please let others know about it and collectively try to let the government know because this is a governmental issue. Okay, what else can we do? We've got one part of the puzzle, and the part of the puzzle that I already suggested could just about solve all our near-term problems. But there are some longer-term problems because over the long haul, we really need to look at possibly doing nothing but renewable energy. And for that purpose, I don't know that the rooftop thing would be enough. It might. But we still have all of the transportation needs. We got to come up with better batteries, better ways of storing energy. All that's pretty far out there. It could be 5, 10, 15 years from now. Still, we should be pursuing them. And one of the suggestions I have, and this is going to sound strange, I suggest that, number one, companies like Toyota, and I'm going to directly name a company, with their Prius, stop doing the nonsense here and come out with a vehicle that can at least go 60 or more miles because those miles are measured like you never stop, you never go kind of miles. 60 or more miles, which would really do about 35 to 40 miles if you're going to work in rush hour and back again. So that, and have a plug that plugs into the vehicle so that we then can really have a hybrid type of car, at least in the meantime, that gets the kind of gas mileage these cars are capable of and does so at a cost that is reasonable. Maybe another 10% more will be added onto the cost of the car. But it is that 10% will make those cars sell like you've never seen, because you will virtually never have to use gasoline except when you go on long trips. For everyday activities, which is what most people use these cars for, going to and from work or going to and from shopping trips on the weekend or whatever, the engine never turns on. When you get home, you plug the thing in, or maybe you have a few solar panels additionally on the roof of the car, which adds to the positive side of it, but it isn't the complete answer. Plugging in is still going to be necessary, because these cars use a lot of energy still. What we need is to increase the batteries by not much at all, but just enough, unfortunately, for the powers that be, especially over at Toyota, who had a great idea with the Prius, to decide not to come out with a plug-in this year or next, because their battery supplier in Korea raised the prices and is having trouble making batteries. What the heck are they thinking? And so now their sales are dropping on this car instead of increasing. Talk about bad business ideas. Okay, it turns out that you can, if you're Toyota, you can build your own battery plants right here in the U.S., in Japan, or wherever you're at, instead of going to Korea. And maybe make them a little bit more efficient, so you don't need quite as much. Maybe they cost a little bit more. Maybe they even cost you more than the Korean ones would. But ultimately, you sell a lot more cars, and people use them much more without turning the engine on. And without turning the engine on, it means a lot less pollution. Because once that engine is running, it's still an engine. And even though it's running a little bit more efficient than a normal engine would, it is still basically polluting the air, and it's not a good thing. The car overall would use a lot less energy, and it would be much cheaper to run. Now, you could say, well, what about what you were saying, that we don't have enough electrical energy, now you're going to plug it in your house. Yeah, but see, that's another part of the equation. That allows people to say, well, if I had a solar system in my house, I not only could use that energy to help run my house, I could also charge my car. Hey, it's not such a bad idea. Now you can say, well, how are you going to charge your car if the car is in home and they're using solar? Remember, it's going into the grid. So that's how you do it. You don't have batteries in your house. You're on the grid, so you're saving the energy into the grid. And you're saving it when it's most needed, which is during the daytime, believe it or not. At nighttime, we don't have a use for most of our peak demand power, so plugging cars in makes a lot of sense, because you're not using energy all that much. And plugging cars in, especially where air conditioning is used in the summertime, really makes sense, because the summertime evening hours are used the least. Now, granted, if you live in a northern cold climate, those of you in Alaska may still be throwing stones at me and saying, well, wait a second. Up here, it's nighttime too long, and we have all this cold weather and all this stuff. Yeah, I understand. You have a special problem. I'm going to get to that. Don't worry. I mean, obviously, we can't solve everybody's problem with every solution. We can get some things done. But for most of us, it makes sense to have a hybrid if the hybrid could be plugged in and gets us to and from where we most of the time go to without turning on the engine and burning gasoline, right? Does that not make sense? If it doesn't make sense, let me know, because it certainly makes sense to me and to a lot of other people I've talked to about it. Okay, and would you pay 10% more for a $25,000 or $30,000 car to get that feature? I think you would. I would. It would make every bit of sense. As a matter of fact, I wouldn't want to buy the car without it. So there you go. But that's me. Maybe the rest of you have a different idea about this. All right. So that's a little caveat I threw. Now, what can we do on a big scale for the future? Because we really need to be planning for 5 years and more out. This is a stopgap. What I've suggested so far is a stopgap to make sense of our present situation. In the future, we should probably be converting some of our cars over to natural gas or to actually liquefying some types of fuels that might be able to be converted from coal, although, again, you get sequestering of CO2 in that process. There are other things, like other ways in chemistry that could be done as well. We need to come up with better batteries, too, by the way. And so all of these things have to be approached. And don't think that most truckers are going to be using battery-powered vehicles. That's not going to help. But we can come up with more efficient means of using the oil that will be still used to some extent for that type of activity. Let's move further ahead here. What are we going to do in the big picture? For the big picture in producing energy, I did suggest already that we concern ourselves with wind power in the United States and some other parts of the world offshore is very good. Offshore is probably better than on the land, but we can do a bit of both. On the land, we might get 15 to 18% done in the U.S. because some of the land that we have that's good for wind, people don't want giant windmills. And then in addition to that, we should look at offshore where it's very efficient. If you go more than 30, 40 miles, you can't see it. It's not like, oh, gee, it's going to ruin my view. I'll see these giant windmills. You won't see them. They're too far away. The horizon is about 60 miles away, and any time you're within 20 miles of the horizon towards somebody, they usually still are visible to them because unless they've got binoculars, they're not going to be able to see it. Okay, so that's one possibility. But that's still not gonna, that's really not enough energy, and it's not consistent enough, and there's a lot of other things, and it's kind of a high-maintenance thing. But I suggested this in an earlier show, and that is wave technology, which is really converting the energy in our oceans that comes from the sun, because the waves mostly come from the wind reacting to the water. And also temperature rises in the water, has some effect on waves, too. And take that energy, and also the pull of the moon has some tides, and take that energy and convert that energy into massive, large electrical power stations. And then pipe that into an enhanced, enlarged, a grid system. And because we can only do this on the coast, you'd have three places you can do it. You can do it on the west coast in certain places. You can do it on the east coast in certain places. And you can do it in the Gulf. In those three places in the United States would produce enough energy to supply all of our needs and some other countries as well, possibly in North and South America. So that's a huge change. How long to build those? Oh, maybe 5 years. Do we have to improve the technology a little? Yes. There are several ways to do it. You can have something that just moves up and down with the waves. You can have the waves move through what would be turbines, in effect. There are several ways and technologies to use it. Some might work better in some places than others. You have to be concerned about protecting the fish and other things so that they're not going to be harmed by this system. And it can be done. It's more long-term than the solutions I've already given, but it's also bigger, and it produces more of a very long-term solution because the amount of energy it produces goes all the way through the 21st century. By the end of the 21st century, we might even run out enough energy from producing wave energy. But by then, we'll be into totally different technologies. And what I'm talking about today, will people will say, well, gee, wasn't that quaint when that guy just said that 90 years ago on that show? Yeah, because just like 90 years before this time, there's so many changes that have taken place. I mean, look at the telephone as an example. If you go from 1920, the phones 1920 as they were, to what they are today, we've really moved ahead. And that's just one example. There's so many technologies that have improved, right? How do we fly? In 1920, you got into a barnstormer, and you're lucky if you made it 100 miles with no accidents. Today, we go in jet planes at 10 times, well, not 10 times, maybe 6, 7 times the speed, and you don't usually think about whether or not you're going to come out okay on the process. Okay, so here we are today. We can make a difference with this one technology that I'm suggesting. And it's more saying, if big government wants to get in something, this is where big government can do something. Because obviously, a whole bunch of your neighbors aren't going to get together with you. Even if you live right next to the ocean and say, well, let's build one of these power plants that costs a few billion dollars and see, and see if we can produce enough power to put in the grid. No, you're not going to do that. It's too big of a technology to use on a small scale. You've got to do it on a big scale, and that's something where government can get involved. So I'm not trying to eliminate all elements of government involvement. I'm just saying for the immediate future, I don't think government is going to be the answer. I think small businesses and individuals are the bigger answer to solving the immediate problems of both economy, to some extent, and energy. And these two are intertwined in so many ways that if we don't look at it from this bigger picture, we may completely screw up both to an unbelievable level. Now, I'm just not hearing, again, the answers that I'm hoping to. I'm keeping my fingers crossed. I'm hoping the stuff we sent just a couple of weeks ago are going to make a difference. I'm just hoping. But you never know. Maybe they used it to light a fire. Or they said, hey, this is a way to solve our energy problem. We'll burn all this stuff and we'll keep ourselves warm because it's still cold back east, you know. And I hope not. I hope not, because we spent a sizable amount of money on what we sent them. I mean, it wasn't, we made a whole beautiful package. I know presentation is a lot of the message, unfortunately. So we presented. We did a good job presenting. But that alone may not be enough. So I need all of you hearing my voice tonight to get involved. And remember, this may be what turns our economy and may be whether or not you're going to have a job, a house, even a car in a year or two. I'm telling you, this could be the single issue that's going to make the entire difference. And that's not to say I think that we need to also come out with a plan of refinancing anybody's house who's more than 110% underwater, as they put it. The present plan doesn't work at all. I don't think it works even slightly. And more than 110%, not less. Right now it's less than 105%. Well, that doesn't make any sense. Everybody who's less than 105% can pay their mortgage. We need to stop people who are on the brink of going under from going under. We need to stop the whole system from collapsing, and that's not happening. So we've got to change that, too. But I am telling you that if we don't keep the infrastructure going about small business and we don't make changes in their energy the way that we do business with energy, everything else is going to collapse anyway. We aren't really that much in a housing crisis as much as we are in a crisis of people losing their jobs. And as that's happening, they can't pay their mortgages. You might say, oh, but it's only 8.1%. Well, let me tell you, it's way more than that. People that are out of work right now are not counted if they're working part-time. And if they're working part-time, you still can't pay their mortgage. Well, they're still going to lose their house, you see. And it also doesn't count people who may be receiving some other kind of minor pension or something. Again, they're not making enough money to pay the bills, but, hey, they're excluded from unemployment. I just came across that thing. So it's crazy. If you're receiving any kind of money at all, you're excluded, so you're not counted as being out of work. And there are more people in that category, those categories I just told you, than are people who are actually receiving unemployment compensation, in my opinion. So unemployment may be as high as 17-18% right now, or underemployment, and we don't even know it. That is the frightening thing. And that's the reason I think the number of houses is going up, and there are almost none of them now in the last 2 months are subprime mortgages. They are plain old folks, like all of us, that are in that situation. 1 in 9 people are presently reaching a point where they can't pay their mortgages. I want you to think about that. Now, some of you are living in apartments, some of you might be living in certain circumstances, but this may not matter to you. But it should, because the whole economy is coming apart around us. If we can change the energy plan, we can change some of the significant problems in our economy in the very near future. we could put to work twice as many people as what the president claims he's going to, which I'm not sure he will achieve it, which is, what, 3.5 million, I think we could put to work 7 million in the next year or year and a half for sure, because there would be so much need in so many different ways for people. And the good news is that a person can learn about this field in like 6 to 9 months, enough to enter it. That's true. There are a lot of other types of jobs that that's not true on. But that doesn't mean that everybody will fit in it. There's, you know, you have to have some aptitude for certain things. But it means that those who do will, and then they will bolster the economy. They'll buy from the people who are artists and the people who are musicians and the people who may be tailors and people maybe. All they'll be buying then, and then they'll keep everybody else going. You see how it works? We're all one, right? Have you got that idea? I hope you do, because if you don't, you're not going to see what's really going wrong with our economy, and you won't see what's going wrong with our energy policies. We have to approach this as we're all connected together. There's a real network going on here, and maybe this is partly happening to become more visible to us for the new coming of age, of the fourth ray coming in, and we all will tend to be more spiritually focused. And one of the ways you get more spiritually focused is by seeing the network, seeing that we're all connected in some ways, and that we are codependent in different elements. And if one person loses their job, we all suffer from that. If one person loses their house, we all suffer from that. Now, does that mean we should be helping everybody? No, I don't agree with that philosophy either. But I do think that there's a lot of people that are hurting that aren't going to be helped by the present policies that I've been reading about and hearing about in the last week or two, 3 weeks at most. And it's very concerning because we're right at the beginning of the changes here, and I hope that this isn't going to continue to be the way things move. We need a smarter system. We need people who are really going to do what's right instead of what they think will get them reelected or maybe just win some brownie points for the people who help to get them elected. It's got to be something that you swallow, you take a deep breath, and you say, I'm going to do what's right regardless of what the consequences, and I'm not going to do what's ideologically just in my favor or even what I believe necessarily, but what is practical, what is pragmatic to make the system work. If we don't do that, we're never going to get out of this mess that we all are in. For those of you who are interested, if you're in the Phoenix area, you can go hear Mimi talk about the astral realm Monday, March 16th from 7 p.m. to 8:15 over at Borders Books and Music at 1361 South Alma School Road. Go see her. It's open to the public, and there is no charge for that. Well, I hope this show has made some sense to everybody. My sense of the way things are going is that we need to get together, and I mean we being the people. Too much is happening with the exclusion of the people. I'm getting a sense as though people are almost asleep about what's taking place due to fear and due to misunderstanding. So hopefully this show has led to some lessening of fear and increasing in understanding so that people will become more active and do more things. That certainly is needed. Okay, well, I'm going to wrap it up for right now. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for You Know What? Why Life Is.